All right. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Katie Reese. I am the chair of the Mesoamerican Caribbean Sea Regional Hydrographic Commission and your chair for the meeting this morning. I would like to welcome everyone to this webinar series that is co-sponsored by my commission, or the MOC as we refer to it, and the IOC Subcommission for the Caribbean and Adjacent Regions, or IOCARIB. For those who may be unfamiliar with the MOC, we are a regional organization of some 30 member states. We do ocean mapping in order to produce nautical charts that are essential for safe and efficient maritime navigation. This is the first of four webinars that's designed to engage all the members and partners from both our organizations to collectively contribute to the International Seabed 2030 Initiative, which we will be learning more about in this webinar series. I'm very sorry to say that our regional Seabed 2030 coordinator, Cecilia Guzman of Mexico, who was going to chair this meeting, was unexpectedly unable to join us due to a family emergency. We look forward to having her back with us in future webinars, and I will chair this meeting in her place. I'd like to just pause and ask if I'm being heard clearly before I go on. Can someone please confirm that I'm being heard?
Yes, Katie, it seems that everyone can hear you well. There was only Cesar and Nat Harman before that they couldn't hear you, but everyone else seemed to be okay.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll ask that everyone try to bear with us. This is a new platform, Interactio, that we have not used before, and we are getting familiar with it, and we know all of you are as well. So we want to just make sure that we can have everyone participate fully and hear each other. If I could have the next slide, please. So I would like to introduce my colleague, Dr. Cesar Toro, who is the secretary of IOCARIB, and invite him to make a few opening remarks before moving on to the agenda and then some additional reminders on how to operate the platform. So Cesar, are you with us? Are you able to speak?
Good morning to everyone. Could you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you clearly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, and really apologize for my apologies for the, trying a new platform that I'm on all the other platforms. But I would like to welcome all of you to today, the first joint webinar between MAC and IOCARIB of IOC UNESCO. As you know, IOC of UNESCO is the Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission of UNESCO, who is the only ocean science United Nations body. And IOCARIB is the subcommission for the Western Tropical Atlantic region, where we have 32 countries and 19 territories covered by the subcommission. So we are really pleased to co-sponsor this webinar and the series of webinars that we are going to have jointly with MAC. And as you, many of you are quite well aware, the United Nations Decade for Ocean Science, of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development was, is going to be launched next year. And as we speak right now, the member states are preparing for the discussion at the United Nations General Assembly for adopting the implementation plan that was discussed. And as you might recall, in the In a few months ago, we have the Western Tropical Atlantic Regional Workshop, where many of you participated. And as you know, the program CBER 2030 is one of the key and instrumental programs that that will contribute to the implementation of the Ocean Decade. So, of the United Nations Decade for Ocean Science. And I will, as you know, this is a part of, and a foundational element for the outcomes of the decade, where we are looking for a clean, healthy, resilient, safe, and accessible ocean. So, as you know, completing the mapping of the entire Wadi Caribbean region was identified at the Western Tropical Atlantic Regional Workshop for the decade as one of the key elements and the main contribution that the region will provide to the entire decade. So this is, I don't need to stress the importance of the bathymetry and having not simply the bathymetry, but having the mapping of the entire seabed of our MAC region. And that will make this, that will be a game changer for achieving the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. So we are looking forward to working with all of you to become one of the first region who is going to be fully mapped and support a sustainable blue economy for all our nations. Nations in the region are waiting and expecting from us to with this major contribution, so that will be a key element for their development as well as for strengthening their economies. As you know, that we are going through a very a major crisis in the history of the humankind with this COVID-19. And but the ocean and the economies and the human activity will continue. And the best way to for us to move forward and contribute to that, to the better life is by contributing with the mapping of our entire region within the CBED 2030 program. I will wish all of you a fruitful discussions, and I, of course, we are very glad and ready for starting. So welcome to this joint webinar. And thank you. Back to you, Kathy.
Very much, César, for those words. And I would like to just echo that while this webinar series is sponsored by the MOC and IO Carib, we really want to stress that this is a broad partnership that we want to engage not just with the members of these commissions, meaning the member states, but also all of our regional partners. There's many other regional organizations. There's industry partners, there's academic partners, there's non-governmental organizations. This is an initiative that will only be successful if we are all collaborating and working together to achieve this outcome. I should have mentioned before, I hope it's been obvious, but this is a bilingual webinar. And there is an audio channel selector that is at the top of your screen on the left-hand side, and you can pick your channel to listen in English or Spanish. And those of you who are bilingual, if you want to switch between the channels, you can do that. So if I could have the next slide, please. So this is our agenda for today. We're just going to be finishing the welcome and the logistics. Then we will move right into our introduction and overview presentations, which will cover the objectives for these webinars, what we are doing and why we need it to do this together, how we can help you do it, and then also give you a picture of the status of mapping in the region. As we go through this presentation, the presenters will pause at certain times to allow for questions as we go through the material, because it is a lot and it's foundational, and we want to make sure that it's well understood. When the presentation is concluded, we will have some additional time for a broader discussion. And then we will end with the conclusions. And yes, there actually is some homework for all of you before the next session. So if I could have the next slide, please. I'm now going to just give everyone some reminders about the logistics of how to operate or navigate the platform, since it is new to all of us. So if I could have the next slide. So I believe all of you have done this successfully already, to select your microphone and camera from the top left of the screen. You can select the camera, your audio input device, which is shown in the middle panel there, and your output device through your headphones and speakers. Could I have the next slide, please? I already talked about how to select the language of your audio channel, so we can move to the next slide. If you want to make one of your video channels on your screen larger, just click into it and it will move into the larger viewing area. And then we do have a chat function here, as I think is probably obvious to most of you, but you click on the chat button that is in the top right of your screen. When that opens up, you will see that it says Mock Seabed 2030 Webinar. If you click into that window, it will give you two separate chats. The first one says Mock Seabed 2030 Webinar 1. That is a chat for just general questions, and particularly if you have technical assistance during, or technical issues during the meeting and you need real-time assistance, you can request that there from our technician. We have a great technician with us named Mikhail, and he will be able to provide support throughout the webinar. The second chat is one for questions and answers, which will be more specific for the presentation itself. So you have both of those available to you. We can go on to the next slide, please. This is important for when you do have a question and you want to be recognized by me as the chair. First, you have to press the button at the bottom of your screen that says raise hand. That will indicate that you wish to speak. When the moderator, who is behind the scenes, sees that you have raised your hand, they will open your speak button, and you will see that the status line will say microphone open. Then the next slide, please. Then when you are ready to speak, you hit the button. When it is blue, it will turn red. When it turns red, that means that your microphone is open and that you can go ahead and speak. And I know it was confusing for some of us when we were first learning it. Some of us thought red means that the microphone is off, but that is not the case here. When it's red, your microphone is open and you can speak. And the moderator in the background will open the microphone and close it, so you don't have to worry about trying to do that. Then if you want to see who else is in attendance, I believe there is a button in the top left that will show you who is participating. And we will also be producing a list after the meeting of everyone who is in attendance. So if we can then, let's see, I believe, let's see if I have any other reminders. We will not be doing individual introductions today. We have too many people to do that. And that's actually a good thing in a sense, because we have quite a number of people that are participating. But as I said, we will produce the full participant list, so you will know everyone who is here. We are also recording these sessions. We're going to record them both in English and Spanish. And we would like to make these recordings available off of our website for other interested parties who either could not participate today, or for other regional bodies in other parts of the world who would like to do something similar to what we are doing here. If anyone has any concerns about having this session recorded, please put that into the chat. At a minimum, we want to record this presentation. The presenters are fine with it being recorded, but at a minimum, we want to have these presentation recordings available so that others can benefit from having that as a as an available resource. I also want to remind you that when you do speak, that you speak slowly and clearly and close to your mic. So the interpreters who are with us today, we have Ruth and Elise, so that they can hear you clearly and be able to translate accurately. So I believe that is all the reminders that I have. So I will now turn it over. We have a couple of wonderful presenters here today who are going to take us through the main content of the webinar series. So if I could have the next slide, please. We have Dr. Vicky Farini, who is the chief of the Regional Data Coordination Center for the Atlantic and Indian Ocean for the Seabed 2030 initiative. And we also have Jennifer Jenks with us, who is the director of the Digital Center for Bathymetry that is hosted in the United States, but it is a data center that is part of the International Hydrographic Organization. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Vicky, please.
Okay, thank you, Katie. Can everyone hear me all right?
Hear you fine?
Great. So before we get started, we just wanted to review the objectives of this four-part webinar series. We're going to start out with just reviewing the overall goals of Seabed 2030 and its importance and how we can work together. We certainly want to use this opportunity to promote collaboration and coordination within the region. We're going to take some time today to review the current status of ocean mapping within the region and to explore some tools that we've built to help this community of stakeholders explore the data resources and really understand where the gaps in mapping data are. And perhaps most importantly, we really want to engage with you, this community. We want to understand what you need. We want to understand if there's existing data that can be shared that we don't yet know about, and learn how we might be able to gain access to that data and integrate it into our regional products so that we can all benefit from each other's work, both in terms of mapping products, but also in terms of approaches and tools and workflows that we might be using so that we can grow together and accelerate towards our goals of Seabed 2030 and the UN Ocean Decade. Next slide, please. There we go. So today we're going to start with just a review of where we are and where we're heading. Next time, in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk in more detail about how we build the map and how you can contribute data. The webinar after that, we're going to focus on increasing data coverage, and we're going to talk in depth about crowdsourced bathymetry and also how we might be able to gain access to polygons that show existing data coverage, even if that data can't yet be shared, so we can really understand where data gaps are. And then in the final webinar at the end of October, we're going to summarize, talk about next steps, and really think about how we can move ahead together as an integrated community. Next slide, please. So the goals for today, as Katie mentioned, are to provide an overview and introduction of Seabed 2030, to review the status of mapping in the region. Jennifer will give you an introduction to the IHO Data Center for Digital Bathymetry. I'm going to demonstrate the web app that we've built for stakeholders in this area. Then we'll have an open discussion and briefly discuss the homework that we'd like you to do for the next webinar. We really want to take this opportunity to, you know, move forward and do some productive work toward our goals. We don't want to just tell you about things that we're doing. We want to work together. So to give you some background about Seabed 2030, as Katie said, I'm the head of the Regional Center for the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. I'm based at Columbia University in New York. If we can go to the next slide, please. So Seabed 2030 is a collaborative project. It's a partnership between the Nippon Foundation and Japan and JEBCO, the General Bathymetric Chart of the Ocean. And it's really meant to inspire the complete mapping of the world's oceans by 2030. And what we're doing in a more tangible way is we're compiling all available bathymetric data into the freely available JEBCO ocean map that can be used around the world by any stakeholders in any community. And the motivation of this project is to empower the world to make policy decisions, to use the ocean sustainably, and to undertake scientific research that's informed by a detailed understanding of the global ocean floor. So a lot of these goals and aspirations are very much in line with those of the UN Ocean Decade. And as Cesar said, it's one of the foundational components of the Ocean Decade is to map the world's ocean. Next slide, please. Why is Seabed 2030 important? Well, first and foremost, I think it could be very easy to argue that bathymetry data is an essential ocean observation. It is a foundational data set upon which many other activities in the ocean are dependent. Seabed mapping data has very broad use and is also very valuable to a wide variety of stakeholders. It's also important to remember that ocean processes extend well beyond territorial waters. So really working together to build a complete map benefits all of us. It's also really important to recognize how little of the ocean has been mapped with direct observation. By our best estimates, based on the most recent JEBCO product, only about 20% of the ocean has been mapped. And the map that's shown on the bottom of this slide, which you'll see come up repeatedly in what I show you today, the black areas in the ocean represent the parts of the ocean for which we do not have data. So vast areas in our world ocean are just not mapped and not known. And if we're going to try to achieve this massive task, we really have to work together and cooperate and coordinate to get this done. Next slide, please. Seabed 2030 has established a regional approach to working toward its goals. So there are four regional centers that have been set up that are meant to engage with stakeholders, really build upon existing efforts. We recognize that a project of this magnitude, we can't achieve it alone. We have to work with each other and really bring everyone together to make sure that we take it, we leverage and promote the good work that many people are doing across our regions. We're also assembling our regional data products, and we're identifying data gaps so that we can inform new data acquisition. There's a global center that is in the UK that is tasked with bringing together the regional products that we build and disseminating those to the world. The map here identifies where the regional centers are located, and the colors also match the portions of the ocean that they are tasked with working on. So they're pretty large areas, and really I think an important thing to remember here, as I said, we want to work with existing efforts, and we recognize that local and national efforts drive regional efforts, which drive the global efforts. And really getting all of those pieces to work together is what we need to do to achieve this goal. Next slide, please. I wanted to point out that in the MOC region, which is identified here in this yellow box in the middle, it actually intersects three of the seabed 2030 regional areas. So the green is the Atlantic, the sort of purple is the North Pacific, and then the red in the lower left is the South and West Pacific. So it's, I think, just important to recognize that the regional boundaries are not a direct match with existing regional boundaries, and that's okay because we're all working together toward this common goal, and we're exchanging information and data and knowledge across certainly the Seabed 2030 centers and hopefully across every other regional effort that has a contribution to make. Next slide, please. It's coming. There it is. So briefly, just to give you a sense of what we mean by 100% mapped by 2030, this is an image from a paper that we published, I think, 2 years ago now, that identifies our resolution goals. And this is really based on what is achievable, though still ambitious, to accomplish in the next decade, and looking at the state of the art and the capabilities of modern ship-based multi-beam echo sounders. So what we have done is identified depth-dependent resolution goals with the highest resolution of 100 meter in the shallow waters, shallower than 1500 meters. And then moving to coarser resolution toward the deeper water. And so you can see in the mock area that there's a fair amount of area that is in the 100 meter resolution target, but also a very large area that's in the 400 meter resolution target. Of course, we certainly want to make the best available data available to the world, but we recognize that there are challenges in doing this, some of which are technical and some of which have to do with data ownership and sharing of data. And so this gives us some space to work with those limitations and hopefully work toward a complete map of the planet. Next slide, please. So briefly, why should we work together? Well, we can certainly learn from one another. We're all doing similar work, trying to create similar data products. And I think that there's opportunity to learn from and accelerate with the kinds of efforts that others are doing. Virtual communication like we're using today is, of course, a big helper in that space, but we can really try to leverage each other's work toward our common goals. We can certainly share data, approaches, workflows, and tools. Sharing data is very important because of the cost of data acquisition. Map once, use many times is a common theme that we hear in our community. We can develop new collaborations and opportunities within our own sectors. So I work in the academic sector, but many of you are in the government sector and in industry, and there's new opportunities for how we can work together and discover new ways of achieving things and new workflows and tools and approaches. Certainly getting input from the broad community of stakeholders is important in terms of coming up with a priority scheme and trying to determine if we can accomplish mapping campaigns. Where should we map and how can we do it most effectively? Capacity development is hugely important. How can we grow our community? How can we accelerate everyone and move faster together? How can we take advantage of the power of the crowd as we bring more people together? And of course, also recognizing that it is one ocean and one planet, which is one of the taglines and hashtags of the UN Ocean Decade. So coming together to do this as one global community makes a lot of sense. Next slide. So very briefly, again, touching on what Cesar mentioned about the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development, it's a very fortunate reality that these two efforts are happening in parallel and that they are so well suited with each other and can certainly help both efforts move forward. There's a lot of great information about the UN Decade that's available online already. And I think that this quote on the left, on the right, captures it well. This is really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, what's happening with the UN Decade. And there's a lot that we can accomplish in the coming decade if we are smart about how we bring our resources together and how we work together in new ways. And I personally am very excited about the opportunity to develop new ways of working as a global community together. I think that will have very long-lasting effects on how we manage the ocean in a sustainable way. Next slide, please. So I'm going to give you a brief update on status of mapping in the region, and I'm going to get into more details about that after Jennifer tells you about the data center. But this is the latest coverage map for the MOC region. So the extent of the MOC regional area is in the sort of gray box there. And as I mentioned, all of these maps that have the sort of black over the ocean, the black indicates where no data have been integrated into the JEBCO map. What we use in that part of the ocean when you see a complete map is predicted bathymetry. So it hasn't been measured. So based on the product that we released earlier this year, this is the extent of actual coverage in that map. Next slide, please. If we look at that coverage and actually break it into the depth-dependent resolution goals for seabed 2030 and do that computation, what we come up with is that about 20% of the MOC region has been mapped. Next slide. But we know that this does not include all existing data in the region, and that's a really important thing to remember. Next. So really, to figure out how much of the region has been mapped, we have to look at the coverage in the JEBCO 2020 map, which is on the left. We have to add to that the coverage of known existing data that is either not yet shared or not yet integrated. And then we have to add to that unknown existing data that is not yet shared. There's certainly data that is out there that we don't yet know about that could potentially cover up some of the black areas on this map. Next. Go ahead again. So we know that if we put all these layers together on the map, we're covering much more of that black area, and significantly more than 20% has in fact been mapped. Next slide. So I'm going to pause to see if anyone has questions about what I've just presented. And if you do, I think you need to raise your hand and then you will be called on by the chair.
Yes, Vicki, thank you. That's exactly right. So just as a reminder, if you wish to speak, click the raise hand button and then I will recognize you in order. And then your microphone will be opened by the moderator. And remember that you will need to click the speak button so that it changes from blue to red in order for you to speak. I see that I recognize Cesar Toro. Cesar, do you wish to speak? I saw your hand up. Okay, he may be having some trouble speaking. Is his microphone open? Looks like it is. All right. Is there anyone else who would like to raise their hand with a question? Well, I don't see anyone else right now, Vicky, so I think you can continue.
Okay, I think I'm actually going to go ahead. Next slide, please. Okay, so next slide. Great, so as Katie said at the beginning, my name is Jennifer Jenks, and I am the director for the IHO Data Center for Digital Bathymetry, which is hosted in the United States at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Many of you are probably familiar with the DCDB, as we refer to it, but just to provide a bit of background, for those of you that might not be, the IHO DCDB is the recognized IHO repository for all ocean bathymetric data. We work closely with JEPCO, with the Seabed 2030 project, to provide the long-term preservation, discovery, and access of source or raw bathymetry data. Next slide. The DCDB was established 30 years ago to steward the worldwide collection of bathymetric data. The purpose is for the center to archive and share freely and without restriction bathymetric data that has been contributed by a variety of mariners. As I said before, we are hosted by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, on behalf of all of you, the IHO member states. Currently, the archive includes over 30 terabytes, and that's compressed data, of oceanic depth soundings acquired by either multi-beam or single-beam sonars. We also have a growing archive of crowdsourced bathymetry data, which I'll go into much more detail in meeting number 3 in a few weeks. The DCDB viewer, next slide, please. The DCDB viewer shows the global coverage of our bathymetric data holdings, as well as the spatial extent of data from other repositories. The intent is that bathymetric data that is submitted to the DCDB would not necessarily be harmonized or quality controlled and assured, but would reside in the DCDB as is. It remains up to the users to determine the data's value and utility for their own purpose. In this way, the fundamental data that resides in the DCDB serves as the world reference of raw bathymetric data, which can be used as the basis for refined and processed products, such as the JEPCO Seabed 2030 bathymetric grids. Next slide. Next slide. There we go. Our map viewer and services promote discovery and access of bathymetric data. Here we are looking at track lines first in green, which represent the multi-beam bathymetric data holdings that are archived at the DCDB and are available for direct download and access. Now, over the last several years, we've begun collaborating with other organizations to ingest their web services as well. So users can now also use the DCDB to discover the bathymetry data holdings from other repositories. Here, we're looking at track lines in red of bathymetric data that are held by IMANET. By clicking on a track line, the user can learn basic information about that data set and then be taken back via a URL to IMANET to directly access their data. Next slide. We have also begun including image services that allow bathymetry grids in the region from Schoen and from the Royal Netherlands Navy to also be discovered. The plan is to, next slide. The plan is to continue to add web services from other repositories and hope that some of the hydrographic offices, industry, and other organizations that are listening today will consider contributing. Next slide. At our next meeting in a few weeks, I will discuss how to go about contributing data and web services to the DCDB. But for now, just want to see if anyone might have any questions about the Data Center for Digital Bathymetry, how to discover or how to access our data. Thank you.
So we will open the floor if anyone does have a question that they would like to ask. Again, please be reminded that you need to press the raise hand button at the bottom, and then I will recognize you and your mic will be opened. You may also put questions into the chat. I mentioned there's two chat channels, and there is one for questions and answers. But it's fine if you put them in either channel. So is there anyone who would like to be recognized? If so, please press the raise hand button.
So Katie, Vicky did tell me that there is a question in the chat window, but I am unable to access it. Here we go. Okay. So I see a question here. As rightly pointed out, partnerships are key and instrumental for achieving our objectives. Can you comment on the number of organizations and companies that have been identified working and having data? So I might hand this one to Vicky, because I believe that this one might be more Seabed 2030 specific related. Vicky, do you want to answer this one?
Sure. I don't know that we have a definitive number that I could tell you off the top of my head. But I know that there are tens of organizations that are contributing data. If we consider the different organizations and vessel operators that are putting data into the DCDB, that includes a lot of academic institutions, the US academic research fleet, many international contributors. There are certainly companies that are contributing data through that route. There are certainly tens of organizations. If we look at data that has not yet come through the DCDB but is contributing to the Seabed 2030 effort, there are many, many more, and more that are beginning to partner with us and committing to acquiring new data to help fill the gaps. I would expect that in the coming year we'll probably have a clearer representation of those organizations and institutions and companies on the Seabed 2030 website, which is undergoing a refresh right now. So we'll have more information on that soon.
Vicky, I think that was, Cesar, that was your question, but I also see that you have your hand up. So I am going to recognize you just to see if you want to add anything further.
Okay, I see that Cesar says no to
that. Okay, and then we do have Vicky one more from John Lowell.
And I'll take that. So John asks, what is the current status regarding crowdsourced bathymetry within the region, and are many nations participating? Since this is a direct ask, I will answer it, but I do want to point out that in our next meeting, two meetings from now, we will have it will be dedicated mostly to discussing crowdsourced bathymetry. But I will say, as of now, that there's two countries, the United States and Brazil, that are participating, that responded to the IHO circular letter in a positive manner, allowing crowdsourced bathymetry activity within their waters. But again, I'd like to save going into those details for that meeting next month.
I did see Leonardo Salazar's hand up, but now it is back down. Leonardo, did you have a question? Yes, so I recognize Leonardo.
Buenos dias.
Good morning. My name is Leonardo Salazar. I belong to the Costa Rica Geographic Institute. I would like to know, what is the process that we have to do to be able to download data from the DCDB? Thank you. So his question was how to download data from the DCDB website.
Able to hear the question.
Translated, so I am not sure if I.
Yes, the question is how to download data from the DCDB channel.
Wants to know mm-hmm. how he can access and download data from the DCDB.
Okay, so in the slide deck, which I do hope, and Katie, you can confirm, I do hope it will be shared with all of the participants. There is a URL to the DCDB website, which includes a button that says access and will take you to the map viewer. In that map viewer, you can select data that you are interested in, and there is a nice step-by-step of how you can actually capture that data, submit your email, and the data is provided to you.
Thank you, Vic. Jennifer. A little later in the presentation, I believe Vicky is going to show the mock Seabed 2030 website, and we have links to the DCDB that you just mentioned. So Leonardo, we will show you where that is, and then you will be able to follow those links to access the data that you're interested in. Is there anyone else who would like to ask a question? I don't see any other hands up. Again, feel free to put your question into the chat. All right, well, seeing none, I think we can move ahead in the presentation.
All right, thank you, Jen, for that introduction to the DCDB. I'm now going to review the online resources for the mock and Seabed 2030, and then I'm going to do a step-by-step demonstration with slides of how the web app that we've built works. Next slide, please. So first and foremost, on the mock website, which is iocmock.org, there is a page specifically dedicated to Seabed 2030, and on this page you will find many important links, including links to the DCDB, links to presentations and other informational documents, and also the map in the center of that page is a link that will take you to the web application. Next slide. The purpose of this web app is really to provide an interactive interface that allows stakeholders to explore these informational map layers. We didn't want to just make it available as an image, such as what's shown here, that you cannot zoom into and interactively explore. We really wanted to give people the power to better understand all the informational layers that exist. And it is really intended to promote collaboration and cooperation within the region. Many of the services that Jennifer showed you in the DCDB map interface are directly embedded in this web app. So we're using the same authoritative services that we don't maintain and update ourselves, but they're just shown through this custom viewer that allows you to explore information for the region. And we have a few additional layers that are only in this web viewer that can help us with coordination and collaboration. So many of the layers that are in here, I will show you what they are and how to interact with them. But in an overview sense, we're providing the JEBCO 2020 base map and the coverage layer, which is again that black overlay that shows where the data gaps are. Then we're showing coverage of known publicly available data and embargoed data. We have layers of planned surveys, and all of these pieces together are how we figure out where the gaps are. It's a little bit complicated because there's no single layer that shows us the answer directly, but my hope is that as you become more comfortable with this interface, it will be easier for you to understand where the gaps in data are and where some of those gaps, maybe there are data that we just don't know about, and you can help us fill in those gaps just by communicating more with us. Next slide. So when you click on the link and engage the map interface, it will look like this. The next slide is going to highlight the zoom buttons in the top left. You could advance to that. It should be a red circle. Maybe. There we go. So you can zoom in and out with those plus and minus buttons. You can also zoom in and out with your mouse. If you have a roll bar on your mouse, you can use that. You can double click to zoom, and you can pan with your mouse. So it's fully explorable, and it will respond to whatever view you'd like to see. Next. And then again. So in the top right, there's a layer icon. Looks like three pieces of paper stacked on top of each other. If you click on that, next, it will engage a layer menu. Can you advance? There we go. So this shows all of the layers that are in this map interface. The ones that have a blue check are the ones that are turned on, but there are several other ones that are there. We've tried to label them clearly to make it understandable so you can know what you're going to see when you click on them. You could go to the next slide. The three dots next to each layer, if you click on that, so go forward, please. It will bring up a menu that will allow you to zoom in to a particular layer, or it can allow you to change the transparency. So if you'd like to see through one of those solid colors, you can do that yourself just in this view to help you navigate the information. You can also change with those move up and move down items in that menu where in this layering of informational maps, how those layers come together. So you could change and move one to be on top of another one. Next. And again. Okay, so the layers that are turned on right now in this view are highlighted in the red boxes. And I wanted to point out that after the name of each of these layers, there's a G, the letter G in a hard bracket. We put that there to help you understand that when you're navigating this interface, all of those need to be turned on to see where the true gaps are. So it is the combination of all of those layers that will reveal the black areas where we do not have data. And I understand and realize that this is a little bit complicated, but we have to do it this way because we are bringing together services from many different organizations and partners. And so we have to be able to bring them together in this way to give you the full picture. In a perfect world, it would be a single layer you could turn off and on, but it's more complicated than that. So next slide. So if we zoom in on a particular area, there's more detail that's displayed. And what we're looking at here is all of those layers turned on. So the areas that show up in black, based on the information that's brought together in this application, are what we recognize as data gaps. Next. If we compare that with the holdings of what's at the DCDB, these purple and pink colors are the results of a gap analysis that the DCDB runs based on data in their repository to show the density of soundings. So purple areas have more soundings, I believe, maybe that's wrong, and pink areas have different numbers of soundings. So this tells us what's at the DCDB. If you go to the next slide, you can see this is what's in the JEBCO 2020 grid. So there are some data at the DCDB that have not yet been brought in to the JEBCO product, but it's very easy to identify them with this tool, and we can go and target that data, download it from the DCDB, and work to integrate it quickly. Next. I want to pause here to see if there are questions about the basic functionality and or the data coverage layers that I just showed you.
Vicki, there is one question that came up that's not specific to the question on the screen, but it is from Michael Jenkins from Belize. He asks in the chat, how is non-public existing industry data shared with the designated authority of the area surveyed? Agreement may have been had, but data has not been received.
I'm afraid I don't have an answer to that question. The non-public industry data coverage that we have access to has been shared because it's publicly available data. The industry, the companies that acquired that data don't own the data, and we certainly have not gone down, we haven't discussed too much about how we might be able to gain access to it, or of course the designated authorities in the survey areas. I presume that's managed by those groups and not something that Seabed 2030 necessarily is directly to be involved with.
If I might try to respond, if I think I understand Michael's question, is that if there is a country that has an agreement with either another country or company to do surveys in their national waters, and there is an existing agreement, then that that data should be provided to the nation that commissioned that work to be done in their waters. And so I think that's potentially a bilateral issue that needs to be addressed as the result of whatever the agreement is. And then whatever country is the owner of that data could then make that data available to Seabed 2030. If Michael, if that addresses your question, let us know, or if you would like to raise your hand to be recognized, just press the raise hand button. All right, I am not seeing any particular follow-up right now, so I'm just wondering if there's anyone else who would like to raise a question about the web application and all the different data coverage layers that Vicki just walked us through. or any other? Oh, and I do see that Michael has responded in the chat. He's going to check with his Ministry of Foreign Affairs to see what the agreement contains. And I did want to add, as Vicky said, this is an interactive web application. We were just unsure, since we were doing this first webinar, whether we could do it live. But we do encourage everyone to please go to the MOC CBED 2030 webpage and explore it. And if there are, you know, any questions, we're more than happy to help you navigate it. All right, I do not see anyone raising their hand or any additional questions in the chat. So that being the case, I think Vicky, you can proceed.
Okay, next slide, please. So what I just showed you is how to best understand where the data gaps are based on our best knowledge of existing data. Now I'm just going to briefly walk you through some of the other layers that are in the application, just to familiarize you with them so that as you explore the application, you'll have a good understanding of what you're looking at. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So the map that's loading right now is, in fact, the same map that Jennifer showed you. It will come forward, I'm sure. It's slow on my screen anyway. The green track lines that show the swath multi-beam data that are at the DCDB. It's still stuck for me. Has it advanced for everyone else? All right, well, we can just, there it is. Okay. So this layer is the service that comes from the DCDB, and we have it labeled as IHO DCDB multi-beam existing data. Right below that in the layer list, you'll see that there's another IHO DCDB layer of single beam existing data. I didn't do an image of that, but just so you know that that is there as well for you to explore and see the extent of. Next. So what the DCDB has done is they've performed a gap analysis, which I mentioned in the previous section. And so what this is doing is it's taking the soundings out of all of those multi-beam bathymetry swath files, and it's looking to see where those exist, and it's creating a more informative coverage map. So the previous map was the ship track line, which is based on the center of the multi-beam swath, and this shows the full extent. And so this is a little bit of a better representation of the extent of that coverage. It does not exist globally, but we are fortunate that it exists within the MOC region and is a resource for us to use. Next. Okay, so another layer that is made available by NOAA of existing data is the National Ocean Service existing data. So the purple polygons and lines that are showing up on the map now are other data that is not fully integrated in the multi-beam repository of the DCDB, but it is publicly available from NOAA. And this is data that we are actively working to integrate into the regional products for this area. Next. So the layers of non-public data, which brings us back to the question that we just had. I'm going to show you what those look like in detail now. So if we can go to the next slide. There we go. So the first one here is called non-public existing unclaused data. So these are polygons that represent data that is known to exist for UNCLOS purposes. The polygons are able to be made public. Permissions are granted for that, but the data have not necessarily been made public. So this is a space where, working closely with the IOC, we hope to be able to move forward to figure out how we might be able to gain access to these data. I should also point out that when we're talking about data that exist, while we do have resolution goals for seabed 2030, there are certainly opportunities for people who hold the data to provide it at a lower resolution than its full resolution, or even lower than 100 meter if that is what's required by their scenario. So there is some flexibility here, and we hope that that will help to bring more data into the space that we can use it and integrate it into our data products that will be made available to everyone. Next slide. So this is non-public industry data, and you'll notice that that large area in the Gulf of Mexico happens to coincide with what we saw in the previous slide. And so there's certainly some overlap happening between those stakeholders. And again, industry data is not necessarily owned by the company that acquired the data, but they are able to share information in some cases about the existence of this data. And so this is a good, important first step to help us know that certain portions of the ocean have in fact been mapped, and perhaps it's a negotiation approach to figure out how to get that brought into our gridded products, rather than sending more ships to go remap an area that's already been very well mapped. Next slide, please. So this is the European bathymetry holdings. I believe it's a combination of both public and non-public data. But I wanted to highlight that there's a significant amount of other data within this region that we have not yet integrated. It could be because we don't know how to find the data easily or for other various reasons, but this is another good example of areas that have been mapped that we know data exists for, and we would like to figure out how we can work with the people who hold these data so that we can integrate it into our data products. Next slide. So just to summarize the known existing data, there's quite a bit of publicly available data. Much of it has been integrated into Seabed 2030 regional products, but some of it is still actively being worked on. Both the US NOS data that is well within the EEZ of the US, and also new multi-beam data that's being added to the DCDB all the time. We're always working to integrate that data as it becomes available. For the non-public data, we need a strategy so that we can gain access to these data for the Seabed 2030 project and for all the stakeholders in the region. I've just identified the three that I just reviewed with you. I'm sure there's more, and we'd love to know more about it, and we'd love to have input from this community on trying to how we can figure out a strategy to get that data into these maps so that we can improve the coverage in the region. And then others listed there just because, again, we know there's more data out there that's not yet on this map in any way, and the first step will be to get lines and polygons on the map so we can recognize that data exist. And then the next step will be to figure out how it might be possible to gain access to that data at some resolution to integrate into these products. Next slide. So the last feature I want to show you about in this interface is the planned survey layers. There's just a few, and we'll go through these, and then I think we'll have plenty of time for more conversation. So if we can go to the next slide. So within the US, there is a coordinated effort to bring together information about planned surveys. That's made available as a service that's open to the public, so we've integrated that into this layer. So that's called Planned Surveys US EEZ. That's blue, showing up mostly within the Gulf of Mexico. If we can go to the next slide. This is a layer that was contributed to, I think Percy received it from some colleagues within the Mach region, identifying planned industry surveys that are currently being planned and hopefully will add significant coverage. And then if you could go to the next slide. I apologize for the blue. It's not very easy to see, but there are some blue polygons that just showed up west of Mexico and also within the Caribbean that highlight areas of member state surveys that are planned within the Mach region. So if we put all these together, we have a better understanding of which portions of that blacked out map will be mapped in the coming years. There's information about them if you click on the polygons and you can learn more about it. So if you go to the next slide. So really there are three different layers to turn on to show the planned survey polygons and coverage. They should be very easy to find in the interface because they all say planned surveys. And this is one of the things we'll talk about during coming webinars about how to gain more information about this from all the stakeholders so that we can really understand where the gaps in coverage will be looking a few years ahead into the future, so that we can be strategic about how to fill the gaps and get the whole region mapped. Next slide. Okay, so that is the end of the presentation about the web application. So please, if you have questions about anything that I just showed you or anything in general, I think we're gonna move into a conversation period now for about a half an hour.
Thank you, Vicki, and thank you, Jennifer, for such a comprehensive presentation. This is the time that we are going to open it up for general questions and discussion. I am seeing there are a couple of comments that are in the chat, and I'm wondering if the people who are making them would be willing to raise their hand and speak to them. John Lowell, I think, your note about your response to Belize's question about data delivery when it is acquired by a third party or a nation would be of interest, because I think that's not an unusual situation. And then Cesar, so if you would consider raising your hands, but I am also seeing that Silvia Chacon Barantes has raised her hand and I recognize her to speak. Sylvia, your mic is open, but you need to press the speak button at the bottom of your screen. And when it changes from blue to red, your mic is open. I am not hearing Sylvia very well. Can we get some help for her? And then perhaps while we are, Sylvia, are you able to turn up your mic louder? I will ask if Mikhail can work with you.
Let's try now. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, that's perfect. Please go right ahead.
Oops.
And Sylvia, please say who you are and where you're from.
Now I cannot hear you. Hello.
Hello. Mikhail, could you please try to work with Sylvia while we take another
on the floor channel? No, maybe I'm not. Now, can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you hear
now?
Us?
Hello. I cannot hear anything.
Okay. I'm asking Mikhail to help Sylvia.
Hello.
And let's try to take another question then while we're trying to work that out. And I would like to recognize John Lowell.
This is John, can you hear me?
Yes, very well, can you hear us?
Yes, okay, yeah, I turned red here, this is good.
Yes, please.
So just to expound on Michael's comment there is, this is a common situation. It happens in the US. This is not unique to any one nation, but frequently the agreement to collect data that the industry may have with a nation within their EEZs would be to deliver the data to a specific point of contact, which would be in one agency. And sometimes that agency may receive that data and then put it in their files, and it's considered to be the actions closed at that point. So the promulgation of that data becomes the challenge. And I just use the delivery of the data to a land mapping agency as a frequent occurrence. So it's incumbent on people within the marine world to have good connections across the data communities within their nation, so that there's open channel of communications when either the agreements are being written, so you get direct copies of marine data, or that there is an internal communication path that allows you to be aware of when data is delivered to another agency that you have access to it. And then hand in hand with that particular, your ability to get to the data is the data can only become useful. It needs to be delivered for safety of nav purposes to the charting authority, whether that's within your own nation or within another nation who may be assisting you with that task. So as you receive the data, you must share it with the charting authority. And of course, to extract maximum value from that data by providing it to the DCDB or even Seabed 2030 via the RDAX, we can get more value of that. As it goes to the DCDB, of course, it becomes useful for research purposes, for coastal management purposes, for safety of nav purposes, for all purposes. So it really depends on how much value you wish to extract from that data. And I can close it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. And yes, that is essential for not only making sure that the data is available to the marine and maritime side of a nation, but also so that it can be provided as appropriate as the nation agrees to contribute it to an effort like this Seabed 2030 initiative. So I'm wondering if we can try Sylvia again. I recognize Sylvia. Can her mic be opened, please?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, and I can hear you.
Very good.
Okay. I was just wondering, because we have performed several bathymetric surveys, but this was really close to the coast and really small areas, only like until depths of 20, maybe 50 meters most. So we are, of course, are willing to share this data, but I'm not sure it will be useful because it is really, really a small region.
Thank you, Sylvia. Vicky, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, sure. I think that at this point, any data that we can learn about or can gain access to will help us fill in the puzzle of knowing what has been mapped and what hasn't been mapped. If it's very shallow water and very high resolution, it could be downsampled to much lower resolution and might not fill in too much area, but I think it's still useful to know that it exists, and to help constrain the bathymetric models with real data, it certainly is worth sharing it if you're able to.
Okay, Vicky, thank you. I guess I should write you an email to you or to whom?
Yeah, That sounds great. And okay. You could send a message to me and Jennifer. And if you forget to put one of us on it, we'll bring the other one in to make sure that okay. We're both in the conversation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia. I now recognize Antonia Williams. Antonio, I don't, now I see your hand down. If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand again. But in the meantime, I will recognize Leendert Dorst.
Hello, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
So hello from the Netherlands. I have one question and I have one comment. My question is, would it be possible to share some usage statistics from the DCDB or from the CBET 2030 web app in order to understand how much this is already used at the moment?
I'll go first, I'll let Jennifer answer about the DCDB. For this web app, I believe we can track how many people are using it. It's really meant to be a collaborative tool for stakeholders in the region to help us work together. Certainly, the Global Center for Seabed 2030, which manages the JEBCO data product distribution, tracks usage and data download statistics. I'm not sure if that's publicly posted on the website, but we could certainly put in a request for that to be delivered. And then I'll let Jennifer answer about the DCDB, whether it's usage or data download statistics. She can handle that.
Jennifer, are you available?
It looks like her technology is not working correctly. But I think I could probably answer and say that they can provide download statistics as well as usage on request, certainly.
And Leendert, we can pass the question to her and get back to you if she has an additional response. Was there anything else? Okay. All right. So I now recognize David Miller. David, please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay, good. Yeah, so my name is David Miller. I'm with Fugro, and Fugro is a private sector survey company. So I can offer some comments here from an industry perspective, and really to, I think, elaborate on John Lowell's comments. So I think, you know, from a private sector survey company standpoint, these known non-public data could be acquired for a national government is one scenario, right, where the national government hires the private sector survey company to collect bathymetric data. And in many cases, or in some cases at least, those national governments don't necessarily have open data policies. So you know, in that scenario, the data has been acquired, it may exist, but it would be really an engagement with that national government to help facilitate the release or availability to the public of that data in some form. The other scenario is that that work would be performed for a private sector entity. And that could be a single organization, or it could be a consortium of organizations. And obviously a consortium makes the ownership more challenging, but it's not uncommon to have a consortium that actually has hired the survey activity. And then to specifically kind of address John's point, typically these surveys require permission from the national government to occur. And often a requirement of that permission is the provision of the data that has been collected. So again, as John has rightly said, in many cases, these data do end up in a national government, but again, not necessarily publicly available, and in many cases, not publicly available. So, you know, at the end of the day, these are negotiations, as I think Vicky mentioned, and they can be complex negotiations because there is national governments involved, and then there is at least one private sector entity involved, or there could be many private sector entities involved if it's a consortium ownership of the data and the project. So I just wanted to kind of provide that additional level of detail on kind of the scenarios that exist and how this engagement would have to occur. It is complex and it's worthy of addressing and exploring for sure. But they're not necessarily, you know, simple conversations with the survey company or even the company that hired the survey company. So I just wanted to offer that perspective.
David, thank you very much. Vicky, do you have any comment or response on that?
I'd just like to thank David for that. I think that's very helpful. And also mentioned that during, I believe it's our next webinar, we'll be reminded for sure when we get to the slide at the end, but during one of the subsequent webinars, we're going to talk about how to contribute data, and we will get the opportunity then to talk about some of the specifics of you know, if it's raw data versus processed data versus a digital elevation model at full resolution or lower resolution. There's many ways to be able to contribute data that hopefully will help us deal with some of the restrictions that various entities have on the full resolution data sets. So.
Thank you, Vicky. I now recognize Antonio Williams. Antonio, your mic is open.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Katie. I'm not sure if this was covered. I came in a bit late, but I wanted to see how we can actually get to download data, because I would like to at least prepare something for my superiors to let them know what kind of gaps we have here in Jamaica in terms of the data that is actually on the DCDB. So I'm not sure if it will be covered in a future presentation, but I wanted to see how do you go and select a block of data and download, for example, and maybe something about the file formats that are on there. Thank you.
Hi, Antonio. Yes, earlier in the presentation, we looked at, there is a web page for Seabed 2030 on the MOC website, which has a variety of links that will take you to the DCDB, talks about how you can access data, how you can contribute data, who to contact. And we will put up the URL of the website toward the end of this seminar. And we will also put it into the chat so that, again, this is a resource that we're trying to make everyone aware of so they can take advantage of it. And I'll just ask Vicky, is there anything else you'd like to add regarding?
Yeah, I'll just very briefly say that with the web app that we've built, part of the goal there is to make sure that you can zoom into the area of interest and see all these different layers together and make at least simple representations for conversation and visualization purposes about where data gaps are. Beyond that, Jennifer can speak to formats that are available for downloading from the DCDB. And she and I have been discussing that we will go into this in more detail during a subsequent webinar to make sure that everyone understands how they can access and download data and work with it.
Thank you, Vicky. And I do see that Jennifer is back with us and has her hand raised, so I recognize Jennifer.
Great, thank you, Katie. Sorry, technical difficulty on this end. As I just put in the chat window, I will put together a handful of slides for the next webinar and actually do a walkthrough of how to select your data of interest and how to actually download and access that data. And we'll speak a bit about data formats as well. And there will be emails provided. And so just do know that you can also reach out directly to me and to Vicky as well anytime. And that goes for your colleagues as well. And we are very able and willing to work with you also one-on-one to access data. But again, I will do an actual walkthrough at the next webinar and answer questions at that time also. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I now recognize Liendert once again. Liendert, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Katie. I have one more comment that I would like to share, and that relates to the planned surveys layer. So in the Netherlands, we have three Caribbean islands on the northeast of the Caribbean Basin and three islands on the south of the Caribbean Basin. So within the Netherlands Navy, we have a ship that frequently goes back and forth between those two groups of islands, so that travels over the central Caribbean Basin. So that ship, we call it the Pelican. We have just put a deep sea echo sounder under it. So whenever it goes over the central Caribbean Basin, it will collect depth data that will be available through our national web services and therefore also to third parties, including Seabed 2030 and the ISO DCDB. So it may be interesting to show that in the planned surveys layer of the DCDB.
Thank you, Liendert. That's exactly what we like to hear. And I believe we can find a way to add that information, not only to our web application, but of course, as you collect the data to have it be contributed directly to the DCDB. Jennifer or Vicky, do you have any other comments on that?
Well, Vicky and I are just texting each other with a high five emoji and saying that's great. So yes, but definitely absolutely interested and look forward to following up offline and seeing what the next steps are there.
Thank you, Jennifer. I am not seeing anyone else in my queue for questions. Oh, I see. Okay. Rafael Ponce. Please click your speak button. When it turns red, then we can hear you.
Hi, Katie. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Go ahead.
Good. Thank you. Just to add to the comments from John and Mark, when I saw that big area in the Gulf of Mexico, the first thing that came to my mind were the oil companies. And in my own experience, when I was in the Mexican Navy in the hydrographic office, I know Pemex has a very good bathymetric database of the Gulf of Mexico. And I haven't seen so far anybody from DIGAOM today here, but I think they would be the conduit to maybe convince Pemex to contribute to the level of detail the level of detail that they want to provide to. But they have the entire Gulf of Mexico covered, but for obvious reasons, oil companies are very protective of their data because it's their competitiveness in the market. But I think they could provide some coarse data to the level they feel comfortable with to contribute. And I think in the case of Mexico with Pemex, the oil company, at least when I was there, DIGAOM and Pemex had a very good relationship, and they could be the conduit to get access to some coarse bathymetry, let's call it like that, for the Gulf of Mexico.
Thank you, Rafael. It's a very good point, and I think it's an illustration of the kind of negotiation that we were talking about just a few moments ago, is that individual countries will need to reach out to not only other government agencies, but also to the private sector as well, to see if additional data can be made available for these purposes. And it will take some effort to search that out and have those conversations. But that is going to be a key part of the strategy going forward. I will ask. Thank you. Vicky or Jennifer, any other thoughts on that comment?
Just thank you for that information. And I look forward to following up on that with you. And I'm not sure I understood all of the abbreviated names, but I'm sure that Katie and I can get in touch with you, Rafael, and we can try to follow that forward.
Yes, I do understand, Vicky. Okay. All right. I don't see anyone else in my queue. However, we had up to 62 people at one point, which is wonderful participation. We have 55 on now. So I do encourage anyone else who would like to take the opportunity to raise their hand, please do so. We have a few more minutes. I recognize Cesar Toro.
Again, I now I understand that is working. I would like to thank the presenters with this very enlightening comprehensive introduction of the issue, etc. And I would like to stress the importance of the partnerships here. And we notice as well that one of the key issues here is strengthen those partnerships, and as well as the discussion that should happen at the national level. That is extremely important that we start the discussion or the conversation, as you some of you say, within those entities, organizations, or institutions who own the data, whether it is in a public, private sector like the national oil companies, or private companies who are producing providing data or to a national institution or a private company in a particular country. What also we noticed during these 6 months of confinement is that there is an explosion on the use of the internet, and there is already several companies who are planning to improve their communication capacity and optic cables, etc. So that what we might expect as well is there will be also a lot of activity on that area. So we need to capitalize on all these new actions and the traditional activities that we know that there is data that we can have access now. So I will encourage us to work, all of us within our in our countries or in our sub-regions, to somehow to make that inventory of what are the institutions and companies that have been working in my region, and provide that to the MAC secretariat, so you can improve the knowledge and improve and enlarge that inventory that we need to have available. And also, I would like to use this opportunity to encourage all the members of the International Bathymetric Chart of the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico, IPCA. As you know, this is one of the tasks you have been all in a very strong cooperation developed, but we still have a few elements in order to finish that bathymetric chart. So this is also an opportunity to move forward in a very collegial manner in order to achieve the implementation of the production of the IPCA and the new features that you are willing to introduce in that particular bathymetric chart. So thank you.
Thank you, Cesar, for those comments. Vicky or Jennifer, any response?
I would just say that just as you were making those statements, Cesar, I was writing down a very similar idea. Having a list with targets and priorities is going to help us build a strategy. And I think the best way to do this is to do it together with the many of the stakeholders who we've gathered here today. So this is a very exciting idea to me that I'm looking forward to pursuing.
Yes, I'll just affirm what we will hope will come out at the end of this webinar series is a strategy that we will put together that will include not only metrics about the progress we'd like to make in terms of completing the mapping of the region, but how we are going to do it, through what partnerships. And I think that inventory that you were suggesting, Cesar, is a very important component of how that will be implemented. Jennifer, is there anything you'd like to add?
Again, as before, Vicky and I are just furiously writing down notes and messaging each other. This is just wonderful. This is a great plan. You know, we absolutely envision having a follow-up conversation with all of the necessary partners and developing exactly what you said, Katie, developing a strategy for moving this forward.
Absolutely. I believe Simon, I thought I saw your hand up at one point. I don't see it now, but would you like to be recognized? Let's see. I do see something in the chat from Simon. I don't know if he has left. So I guess I will share it. For interest in another conference, Fugro spoke about their approach with regard to working with their private customers to persuade them to share data. To share data Fugro has collected to be then uploaded at a lower resolution to the Seabed 2030 data portal. This is a sensible and cost-effective approach. So yes, it's a very good point, but again, it comes back to the negotiation between the company who has collected the data on whose behalf. All right, I do not see anyone else in the queue, and we are starting to come into the time we need to begin ending our session. So Vicki or Jennifer, do one of you want to move through our final slides there to talk about the homework?
Yeah, sure. So I think, first of all, that today was great. It gave us a chance to really give you some more detail about what we're trying to do and why it's important, and a little bit more information about some of the tools that we've built to help this community move toward this important goal. I think in the conversation, the side chat that Jennifer and I have been having, we have some ideas of additional things to make sure that we bring forward in the subsequent webinars. So we will be sure to show you how to download data from the IHO DCDB. We're going to talk about how to upload data, how to contribute, really how we're building these data products. So it's really good for us to get feedback during these conversations so that we can help make sure that our future time together is as effective as possible. Next slide, please. So just a reminder, these are the topics that we plan to discuss during the next few webinars. I think the next one is going to be very informative about, we're going to get into some of the details about some of the metadata and information that we would like to get accompanying data, if possible. We're going to talk more about, you know, possible lower resolution contributions or synthesized products that could be contributed. The next webinar after that, we're really going to talk about trying to make sure that we have as much of that black area in these maps covered with knowledge about existing data and or planned surveys. So we'll talk about how to bring that together. And then we'll wrap it up in the final webinar. At the end, I think that's when we'll really get into the strategy of how we can gain access to some of these existing data sets. I see a question in the chat. I'm not sure if that one's for me. So I'm going to...
Leo, would you like to raise your hand to ask your question? Okay, Leo, your mic is open. If you'd like to speak, just press your speak button. When it turns red, then you can proceed. Well, he may be having some difficulty, but his question is, when are the questionnaires to be returned regarding data access by interested countries? I'm not quite sure what he's referring to. Vicki, do you?
It might refer to crowdsourced bathymetry. And if so, we will be talking in much more detail about crowdsourced bathymetry in the third webinar in this series, which is on October 9th. So hopefully.
Right.
Oh. Do we have you, Leo?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, can hear you fine.
Great. I thoroughly enjoyed the presentations this morning. And as I'm new to this group, I was really interested in finding out that question I asked in connection with the questionnaires and the sourcing of information, et cetera.
Yes, go ahead, Jennifer.
I was just going to say, in regards to crowdsourced bathymetry, so yes, the IHO circular letters were sent out to member states and to non-member states in June and July, I believe, with a suggested return to the IHO, I believe last week, early September. But member states and other countries are still welcome to provide their responses to those questionnaires at any time. And as Katie said, in the third webinar, we're going to devote, I believe, an hour just to crowdsourced bathymetry, where the initiative is to date. And we will walk through the questionnaire and discuss and hopefully provide answers to questions that we know that many countries have. So again, the short answer is if you are working with your hydrographic organization office on replying to that circular letter, you can return that to the IHO at any time. And again, in the third meeting, we will discuss it in further detail.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, and I just want to confirm, Leo, that especially for those who are not as familiar with the International Hydrographic Organization or even the MOC itself, getting those letters, you know, it might not be very clear. And so we wanted to be able to help support countries to respond by having a focused webinar on this very issue, as Jennifer just said. So we think that will be more informative and it will help facilitate a better response. All right, I am not seeing any other hands up or anything further in the chat. So Vicki, I think you can go ahead to the next slide.
All right, so homework. We would like everyone who's able to please explore the web app that we've built. The URL is listed on the slide. It's also accessible directly from the MOC website. If you have any problems or questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. We're also asking you to identify if you know of other data sets that are not represented in that map interface. Please let us know about that. If there's web services that we can integrate either into this web app and perhaps also into the IHO DCDB, that would be really good information for us. If you have polygons that represent the extent of coverage of data that you know exists but maybe can't be shared, we'd love to get that as well and get that into this interface so that we have as much information as possible to work with as a community. We also want to be sure that this conversation that we're having over this webinar series is really an opportunity for us to also help you. So if there are technical challenges that you have that we might be able to help you with, you know, whether it's from how to download data from the DCDB, which we will certainly integrate in a subsequent session, or workflows, or how to assemble whatever it might be, metadata, data products that might more easily plug into these efforts that we are trying to do together, please bring those forward so that we can collectively as a group try to help each other solve our problems. Some of us may already have answers to questions that others have. We really want to learn from each other and make sure that this is really a mutually beneficial experience for all of us. If you have input on strategies, names of organizations or people that we should start to think about factoring in to this bigger picture strategy, please start putting that on paper or in an email so that we can discuss that and work together to act on that. And then finally, if you have any questions or correspondence about this webinar or future webinars, we encourage you to email our Seabed 2030 coordinator for the region, which is Cecilia Cortina, who could not join us today, and also CC Percy Pacheco, who is on the call with us today. And they will make sure that the information is sent to whomever needs to hear it. And as Jennifer said earlier, if at any time you have questions for me or for her, don't hesitate to contact us directly. And the next slide, I think, is the last one. So Katie, back to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Vicki. And again, I want to thank everyone for their participation. Just wonderful that we had so many people in attendance, and we weren't sure how the technology would work, and it seemed to have been relatively smooth, so we're very happy about that. I would like to particularly recognize our translators, Ruth and Elise, who've done a great job, and also Mikhail for providing our technical support, and the whole team behind the scenes that has worked really, really hard to make this happen. So we hope that this has been informative and motivating. We hope that, you know, you're getting the sense of excitement that we have about the possibilities here for us to join forces. And we'd like to have our region be the leader, to be the first region fully mapped as part of the Seabed 2030 initiative. And we think, you know, working together, we can certainly achieve that. And so we will look forward to seeing you at the next webinar on September 25th. And we would also really appreciate your feedback on this webinar and the platform we're using, Interactio, so that we can make the next webinars even better. So a link was just put into the chat. It just will take you to a very short feedback survey. So please take a moment to respond to that so that then we can use that to inform the organization of the upcoming webinars. And so with that, I will just close and say that we are looking forward to seeing all of you again in just a couple of weeks. And enjoy the rest of your day or your evening, depending on where you are in the world. Thank you very much.